the United States has brought along NATO, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the Japanese as well.
New allegations of cybercrime, and it's not about Russia. It's Tuesday, July 20th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, an update on why available COVID vaccine in the U.S. is not being used, how the pandemic has changed the Olympic Games. Afghanistan asks all of its diplomats in Pakistan to return to Kabul. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States and other countries are accusing China's Ministry of State Security of using criminal contract hackers to conduct unsanctioned cyber operations globally. Joining us on VOA Asia is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Steve, what's the United States and its allies claiming?
This is relatively unique in that the United States has brought along NATO, the United Kingdom, Canada, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, in issuing this public accusation and condemnation of China's civilian domestic spying agency, the Ministry of State Security, of using criminal contract hackers to conduct cyber operations around the world, from which sometimes the hackers have been personally profiting.
So is this government sponsored?
That is the allegation that the United States and others are making, that there are people in the Ministry of State Security that are involved in this, that are condoning the activities or directing the activities of these Chinese hackers, which is a little bit different than what we've heard lately from the Biden administration about these Russian ransomware operations, where they've always said, we don't have any evidence that it's directed by the Russian government or that the Russian government is controlling it, but we do believe that the Russian government could stop it. So the allegations against China are much more direct.
Now, what does this do as far as the Biden administration policy and actions that might or might not have taken already about allegations that this all did come from Russia?
Well, the only concrete thing we have seen in public immediately, besides the allegations, is a revelation by a number of U.S. government agencies in a joint advisory stating blatantly that this is a sophisticated Chinese state-sponsored cyber activity, but also sort of revealing exactly what they were doing and then putting out advice as to, for companies and agencies to protect themselves against these sort of attacks.
Does this put the Biden administration in kind of a sensitive area here, or maybe that they're going to have to change their tune about what is being said about Russia's responsibility for this?
Well, I don't know that this directly affects anything with Russia, although, we've had President Biden, for example, when he met with President Putin in Geneva, directly telling the Russian president, hey, you need to do something about this. Now, U.S. officials speaking to reporters on background on Sunday evening before this was made public did say that they had spoken to the Chinese about this. But whether we're going to get a clear indication later today or later in the week that unless something is done to stop this, that there will be some sort of retaliation, a cyber retaliation against China, or that the United States would put in place more sanctions against China, that remains to be seen.
What does it mean that these allegations against China is from what seems to be an alliance or a list of nations rather than just the United States?
Yeah, the United States is saying that it's very significant that this is just not a singular accusation by Washington. And we know behind the scenes that sometimes some of these countries are reluctant to take such a high public profile attacking China. They have been working on this for some time, and we're told that the list of countries condemning this activity by China may be expanding.
The activities include ransomware operations against private companies that are forced to pay millions in ransom demands to regain access to the data, according to U.S. officials. China has consistently denied being involved in such activities. VOA Asia continues. With COVID-19 cases rising in the United States, some cities and counties are telling all residents to wear masks indoors, even if they're vaccinated, while the Biden administration points to the prevalence of misinformation about vaccinations, especially on social media, as one of the drivers keeping people from getting shots. Michelle Quinn has more.
Throughout the United States, cases of COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, are rising. Driving the surge, officials say, is the spread of the Delta variant, combined with low vaccination rates in some communities, often fueled by misinformation about the vaccine. It was only in mid-June when California celebrated the lifting of pandemic restrictions. Now, some communities, such as Los Angeles, have reinstituted mask guidelines for indoor gatherings, even for the vaccinated.
I'm not pleased that we have to go back to using the mask in this manner, but nonetheless, it's going to save lives. And right now, that to me is what's most important.
The Delta variant appears to be making inroads, even in places where many are inoculated. In San Francisco, with 76% of residents over 12 fully vaccinated, cases rose fourfold for the week ending July 7, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. President Joe Biden and others in his administration say nearly all those hospitalized for COVID-19 are unvaccinated.
I'm worried that what we're starting to see increasingly in states like Arkansas and Missouri and Nevada and my home state of Florida and Louisiana, these surges within the unvaccinated population, that we will continue to see that unless we get a hold of this pandemic by getting more people vaccinated.
The Biden administration is calling for social media firms to do more to counter the spread of vaccine misinformation on their sites. Facebook responded that it has taken down more than 18 million pieces of COVID-19 misinformation and will continue to do so, but fighting the pandemic will take all of society. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The coronavirus pandemic has forced Tokyo 2020 organizers to forego many Olympic traditions. The changes may impact fan interest, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
The medal presentation ceremony is usually one of the most iconic Olympic moments, when victorious athletes bow their heads to receive medals. But at the Tokyo Olympics, which start Friday, athletes will be presented medals on a tray. They will then hang the medals on their own necks. The do-it-yourself medal ceremony is just one way the Summer Olympics will look different this year. There will also be cavernous empty stadiums, a prohibition on athlete high fives and hugs, and no torch relay. Alessandro Libri, a Tokyo-based journalist, says that's a shame.
Japanese, obviously, they're very well organized, but to recreate the sort of missing Olympic spirit, which is the essence of every game, is going to be very difficult.
The big question is, how much will anyone care? Amid a still-raging pandemic, there are signs global interest is lacking for what some media have already labeled the no-fun Olympics. Only 46% of global respondents said they were interested in the Tokyo Olympics, according to an Ipsos poll. Underlying it all is worry the Games will serve as a super spreader event in Tokyo, which remains in a state of emergency after a spike in COVID-19 cases. Already, three Olympic athletes have tested positive, prompting a wave of negative headlines, says Libri.
He wasn't supposed to be there in the Olympics for some reason, had some sort of critical voices. But we are on a different level now, and it's 3-4 days to go.
Organizers hope that once the competition begins, the attention will shift away from the pandemic. But that may be tough. Jack Tarrant is a freelance journalist in Tokyo. He says media access to athletes will be very restricted due to COVID-19 protocols.
We're not going to be allowed to get close to them, to get to know them, to get to know their personal stories, which is what the Olympics is all about. Instead, it's going to be fairly formulaic. It's going to be video conference interviews.
To create more connections with viewers, organizers are relying on technology. Fans can post video selfies that will appear on giant screens in the stands. They can also click cheer online and have their digital applause appear on broadcasts and video boards in stadium. Athletes who finish their competition will be able to interact with friends and family back home via video messaging. But a lot of that has already been tried in sports leagues around the world and fallen flat, says Tarrant.
It's nowhere near the same, and I think the Olympics might struggle even more on that front because, unlike with club sports in the US, for example, fans don't tend to be as passionate about a specific team or about a specific person in the Olympics. Lots of people who watch the Olympics are viewing it very, very casually, and are therefore probably going to be less than impressed watching it in empty venues where it's going to appear a little bit flat.
The most normal part of the Olympics could be the opening ceremony, which will likely include familiar elements such as the Parade of Nations, high-profile musical performances, and pyrotechnics. But even that event will look different. Only 1,000 VIPs are expected to attend the ceremony. That means the vast majority of the 68,000 seats will lie empty in the $1.4 billion Olympic Stadium, which was built with this very event in mind. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Now on VOA Asia, an alternate on the United States women's gymnastics team has tested positive for COVID-19 in an Olympic training camp in Japan. Olympic champion Simone Biles was not affected, nor were any of the other favorites to win the team gold, but another alternate was placed in isolation because of contact tracing, according to U.S. Gymnastics. The positive test was the latest in a growing line of daily reports of athletes and others testing positive at the pandemic-delayed Olympics. The unnamed gymnast was the first American. This past weekend, Afghanistan said it had asked all of its diplomats in Pakistan to return to Kabul until Islamabad addresses all of what it was calling security risks and bring to justice those behind last week's brief abduction of the Afghan ambassador's daughter. VOA's Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad shares the latest with International Edition host Steve Miller.
It is unfortunate that the relationship between Afghanistan and Pakistan is already fragile and, you know, marred by suspicions and mistrust. And now we see this incident that has taken place. It happened on Friday afternoon, but for the first time, the Afghan embassy informed the Pakistani foreign ministry on Saturday. And then the investigation began, and Pakistan promised that they will quickly, unearth whoever was behind it. So while we were waiting for an outcome of the investigation, then suddenly this Afghan foreign ministry issued a statement that Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has ordered all the diplomats, including the ambassador in Islamabad, to return to Kabul until this incident is properly investigated and those behind it are brought to justice.
What do we know more about the actual kidnapping incident itself? Because, you know, the information that's coming out from Afghanistan was that the ambassador's daughter was severely tortured. What have the authorities said about what happened?
This has been confirmed by the medical report we have seen after her examination was conducted in a hospital in Islamabad that she was tortured, physically attacked. The statement that the lady has given to the police in Islamabad was that she was out for some kind of shopping for her brother, buying some gift. The interesting aspect of the whole event that she has described in her statement is that she was traveling in a rented car, like she wasn't traveling to this commercial area in Islamabad in the diplomatic vehicle, which, you know, the families and all diplomats are bound to use the diplomatic vehicles, which are properly secured. Instead, she was traveling in a cab. And that's when she said that while she was on her way home, this cab driver stopped the car. Some person, unknown individual, entered the car. And that's when he took her hostage for several hours. And then later she was found somewhere in a residential sector in Islamabad. So they are hopeful and they have already identified several cab drivers.
VOA's Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad speaking with VOA's Steve Miller. Thank you for being with us. Thank you to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That includes Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, Chris Cascayo, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Ira Melman. Please stay safe and enjoy the coming days.